You know, usually when we talk about a medical diagnosis, there's this expectation of like clinical precision.
Right, yeah.
Like you break your arm, the x-ray shows that jagged white line,
yeah.
The doctor points to it, and well, the treatment plan is just obvious.
Exactly, it's binary.
Yeah, binary. Broken or not broken. But when you step into the world of corporate finance, specifically when a massive company is, you know, teetering on the absolute brink of collapse, that diagnostic certainty just completely vanishes.
Ugh, totally. It's gone.
The x-ray machine is broken. The patient is hiding their symptoms. And the environment is just total chaos. So, welcome to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be here.
Today, we're exploring the high-stakes, high-reward world of distressed M&A in India. We're using a recent, highly detailed breakdown from KNM India, which was authored by Chavi Gar, to uncover exactly how specialized professionals step into these failing companies.
Which is incredibly complex work.
Right. And our mission today is to figure out how they use like rigorous analysis to find hidden value
right.
where the rest of the market only sees massive, terrifying liabilities.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Because dealing with distressed companies is framed as this ultimate two-sided sword for you, the listener. The risks can literally end your own company if you get it wrong. But if you get it right, the value creation is staggering. So why are we even looking at a failing insolvent business as a strategic opportunity?
Well, it's because you have to separate the underlying assets from the failing corporate structure. In these specific scenarios, I mean, we aren't just talking about a standard financial transaction.
Right.
It is a fundamental business transformation. When a company hits severe financial distress, its valuation obviously drops precipitously. The market panics, vendors demand cash up front, and, well, stakeholders flee.
Sounds like a nightmare, honestly.
It is, but the core assets, say, a state-of-the-art manufacturing plant or proprietary software or even just a massive established customer base, those might still be incredibly valuable.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they are just trapped inside a toxic, failing structure. So for acquiring companies, this is the ultimate opportunity to acquire strategic, market-dominating assets at a fraction of their peak cost.
Oh, okay.
But the reason it's a two-sided sword is that you aren't just buying those assets. If you aren't careful, you are buying the crisis itself.
Yeah, and before we can even talk about how to separate those good assets from the bad structure, we need to understand the environment causing the distress in the first place, right?
Exactly.
The KNM India piece points to two main drivers for these distressed deals: severe liquidity crunches and regulatory challenges.
Yeah, those are the big two.
A liquidity crunch is, I mean, it's straightforward enough. The company simply runs out of cash to make payroll or pay its immediate bills.
Well, yeah.
But the regulatory landscape in India is where this gets incredibly nuanced.
Oh, highly nuanced.
We are dealing with the IBC, which is the Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code, and the NCLT, the National Company Law Tribunal. Let's ground this for you. If I'm looking at a distressed asset, I'm not just buying a fixer-upper.
No, not at all.
It feels more like buying a used car that has massive legal liens against it. You might love the engine, but you can't even drive it off the lot until you deal with the bank, the previous owner's unpaid tickets, and, you know, the impound lot.
That's a great way to put it.
But why can't a buyer with deep pockets just, like, inject cash and drive the company away? Like, isn't investing in a distressed company just a money pit? How is this different from trying to catch a falling knife?
Well, what's fascinating here is that relying solely on deep pockets is actually the fastest way to destroy your own capital.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The assumption from outside investors is often that a failing company just has a math problem, you know?
Right.
Like, it just needs a massive cash injection to stabilize.
Right, throw money at it.
Exactly. But in the Indian distressed M&A landscape, capital alone is completely useless without regulatory navigation. If you pour millions into a distressed company without the right legal structuring, that money will instantly vanish into the void of outstanding liabilities.
Just gone.
Just gone. The ghost creditors will just absorb it. So the IBC was specifically designed to stop that kind of chaos. It is a very strict, highly structured legal framework that dictates the exact hierarchy of who gets paid when a company fails.
Meaning secured creditors, like major banks, are at the front of the line, and operational creditors or equity shareholders are at the back.
Precisely.
So if you just hand the failing CEO a check, you aren't actually fixing the company. You are just temporarily funding the people at the back of the line while the banks still hold the power to liquidate the business.
Exactly right. And the entity that enforces that line is the NCLT. They are the tribunal that legally oversees and approves any resolution plan.
Okay, so you can't bypass them.
No, you cannot just negotiate a private deal with the failing company's board of directors to buy their best assets. Their authority is effectively suspended once the insolvency process formally begins.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, you have to submit a resolution plan to the NCLT. You have to navigate pending lawsuits, hostile creditors, and just massive regulatory roadblocks. That is why the source emphasizes that highly specialized professional help is mandatory here.
Right, because you're navigating a legal labyrinth where one wrong turn means you inherit the previous owner's unpaid debts.
Exactly. It's fatal to the deal.
Think about your own crisis management at work. Whether you are leading a marketing team or, I don't know, managing global supply chains, understanding the specific structural constraints of a failing project is always the first prerequisite to fixing it.
Definitely.
If you don't know the rules of the system you are operating in, well, throwing budget at the problem just drains your resources. You have to understand the boundaries before you can engineer a solution.
Which brings us directly to the professionals who actually engineer those boundaries. Because the legal and financial stakes are so high, acquiring companies bring in transaction advisory teams.
The detectives, essentially.
Right. The source breaks down the specific services they provide, and the overarching theme is extreme time pressure. In distressed assets, time literally evaporates value.
Right, because the longer a company sits in legal limbo, the more the going concern value deteriorates.
Exactly.
Like, key employees jump ship, clients cancel their contracts, and the brand reputation just takes a massive hit. So these transaction advisory teams deploy to perform triage.
Yes, triage is the perfect word.
They handle comprehensive due diligence, which means tearing apart the finance, tax, and local operations to see what is actually real versus what the failing management claims.
Right.
And they do independent business reviews to see if the core product is even viable in the current market. And of course, they handle valuation and negotiation. But here is the structural pushback I have.
Okay, so let's hear it.
Every major company already has a massive internal accounting department. They have a CFO. They have access to the general ledger. Why can't a company's standard internal accounting team handle this? Why bring in an expensive external advisory team when your internal professionals already know the books better than anyone?
Well, it's because the mindset required to navigate a crisis is entirely different from the mindset required to maintain steady state operations.
How so?
Standard internal accounting teams are, by definition, historians. Their professional mandate is to track normal operations, ensure compliance with historical reporting standards, and perfectly record what has already happened.
Right, they look backward.
Exactly. But in a distressed scenario, historical performance is largely irrelevant. I mean, whatever they were doing historically is exactly what led them into insolvency.
Oh, that's a great point. So the historians are basically useless for predicting the future of a crisis.
Pretty much, yeah.
They can tell you exactly how you went bankrupt, down to the penny, but they can't plot the escape route.
Precisely. Transaction advisors act as the strategic link between insolvency and innovation. They aren't just looking at the books to reconcile past expenses.
What are they looking for then?
When they conduct evaluation, they aren't using a standard discounted cash flow model based on rosy future growth. They are running stress scenario evaluations. They are mathematically modeling what happens if, say, the supply chain completely freezes for 3 months, or if the NCLT forces a massive haircut on the debt. They are looking to uncover what the source calls latent value.
Latent value.
Yeah, the hidden worth of the assets if you completely strip away the toxic management structure. Internal teams are practically blinded by their proximity to the problem.
Yeah, they're too close to it.
They have inherent biases, they are trying to protect their own jobs, and they often have an emotional attachment to legacy projects.
Ask yourself how you handle crisis management. When you are too close to a problem, bringing in an independent, objective review is often the only way to strip away internal biases. Because when you are inside the burning building, every single piece of furniture feels essential. You lose the ability to ruthlessly prioritize.
That's very true.
An independent advisory team comes in with no emotional baggage. They can look at a legacy division that the founders love, realize it's bleeding cash, and immediately recommend shutting it down to save the core business.
And beyond just internal objectivity, these transaction advisors provide external credibility.
Which is huge.
It is. Remember, the market is panicking, the creditors are terrified. if the internal management team that steered the ship into the iceberg suddenly issues a press release saying, hey, don't worry, we have a turnaround plan, no one is going to believe them.
No, of course not. The creditors will just push for liquidation.
Right. An independent transaction advisory firm brings the professional rigor needed to actually convince the NCLT and the banks that the new resolution plan is mathematically sound.
Okay, so the advisory team has secured the perimeter. They're digging through the operations, running their stress models. But what exactly are they looking for to prove the company can actually be saved?
Good question.
Because they aren't just there to write an obituary. They are hunting for the inflection point, the exact moment the company stops plummeting and starts stabilizing.
Yes.
The KNM India analysis breaks down three specific categories of turnaround signals. The first is financial indicators. They're looking for increased cash flow, decreased operating losses, and tighter payment periods. But importantly, they are hyper-focused on improving current and quick ratios.
And that quick ratio is a vital metric in distress situations.
Break that down for us.
Sure. Unlike a general current ratio, which includes inventory, a quick ratio is a brutal stress test of a company's immediate liquidity. It measures whether a company can pay its short-term obligations using only its most liquid assets, like cash on hand or immediate receivables, without relying on selling off its inventory, which can take months.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Finding these specific financial signals is exactly like checking a patient's vital signs in an emergency room.
I like that analogy.
If a trauma patient rolls in, you aren't looking for robust, perfect health. You aren't checking their cholesterol levels or asking about their long-term fitness goals.
Right, you're just trying to keep them alive.
Exactly. You are just looking for proof of stabilization. Has the bleeding stopped? Is there a pulse? In M&A terms, that quick ratio stabilizing is the pulse. It proves that the core mechanics of the business can still function if you just isolate the toxic debt.
It's the perfect diagnostic framework, because once you establish that financial pulse, you have to ensure the bleeding doesn't start again.
Right.
That leads directly into the second category of turnaround signals, which is operational and management changes. A stabilizing quick ratio doesn't happen by accident.
No.
It is almost always driven by bringing in specialized accountability. The source explicitly points to hiring a new turnaround CEO or a chief restructuring officer, a CRO. These are specialized professionals whose entire career is built on entering chaotic environments, enforcing extreme production efficiency, and just drastically reducing waste.
But operational efficiency in a vacuum doesn't save a company if the creditors are still ready to pull the plug and liquidate the assets.
Very true.
That internal operational shift has to instantly translate into external leverage, which leads right into the third category, market and stakeholder confidence.
Yeah, that's crucial.
This is when you see a return to favorable industry press, upgraded ratings from analysts, and crucially, supportive key creditors.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you can see the absolute causality between these three signals. They are a domino effect.
Oh, I see.
The market doesn't just magically regain confidence when institutional creditors see that a company has brought in an independent professional restructuring officer that signaled two, and that officer aggressively cuts waste to improve the quick ratio signal one, the creditor's panic subsides.
Making sense.
That creates signal three. The creditors realize that keeping the company alive as a going concern will actually yield a higher return than selling it off for scrap parts.
Right. They see the value in keeping it running.
They become willing to negotiate. And without supportive creditors, getting a resolution plan through the Indian NCLT is practically impossible.
So the detectives have found the pulse. The turnaround signals are verified. Now comes the hardest professional maneuver, deal structuring.
This is where it gets really tricky.
Yeah, how do you actually acquire the valuable assets without absorbing the lethal liabilities? You want the advanced manufacturing equipment and the client list, but you absolutely do not want the unpaid tax bills and the massive debt defaults that forced the company into insolvency in the first place.
Nobody wants that.
The source details what it calls growth strategic frameworks. And the most critical tactical lever here is that transaction advisors will almost always structure the buyout as an asset purchase rather than a share purchase.
This is the foundational mechanic of distressed deal structuring.
Why is that difference so important?
Well, if you execute a share purchase, you are buying the legal entity itself. You are stepping into the shoes of the previous owners.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That means you inherit every single thing that corporate entity owes, every hidden debt covenant, every pending employee lawsuit, every unresolved tax liability. In a distressed scenario, that hidden baggage will immediately sink the acquiring company.
It's an unacceptable level of risk.
Exactly. By structuring it as an asset purchase through the NCLT process, you are selectively buying the machinery, the intellectual property, the real estate.
Just the good stuff.
Right. And you are legally leaving the old corporate shell and all of its toxic liabilities behind to be liquidated or dissolved. The NCLT approval process essentially provides a clean slate doctrine.
A clean slate.
Once the tribunal approves the resolution plan, it legally extinguishes the historical claims against those assets, creating a firewall that protects the new buyer.
Wait, if you are only taking the physical assets and leaving the corporate shell behind, what happens to the day-to-day operations in the meantime? Because navigating the IBC and waiting for an NCLT tribunal to stamp the paperwork takes months. If a buyer just strips the assets and leaves the shares behind, doesn't the original business effectively die? The engine rusts while you are arguing over the legal title. How do interim management deals actually keep the going concern alive?
This raises an important question about the reality of deal execution. You can't just pause a major corporation.
No, you can't.
If the factory stops producing or the enterprise software goes offline for 6 months, the customers will leave and the going concern value is completely destroyed. The asset you are trying to buy becomes worthless.
Right.
To prevent that, transaction advisory partners structure incredibly complex interim management dealings. They set up specialized oversight structures that allow the day-to-day operations to continue seamlessly while the ownership is in legal limbo.
So it's like a babysitter for the business.
Sort of, yes. It creates operational transparency, prevents the outgoing management from sabotaging the assets, and keeps the core business generating revenue right up until the NCLT hands over the keys to the new buyer.
And the KNM India piece highlights their own specific role in this broader transition. Because a distressed acquisition isn't just a local legal hurdle.
Definitely not.
If a foreign multinational is swooping in to buy this distressed Indian asset, they are instantly triggering global compliance issues.
Huge issues.
They need help establishing offshore development centers, navigating international taxation, and managing something the source specifically flags, Pillar 2 transfer pricing. If you don't understand the mechanics of Pillar 2, it can completely blow up the valuation of the deal.
Pillar 2 is a massive paradigm shift in global finance. It establishes a global minimum corporate tax rate of 15% for large multinational enterprises.
15% everywhere.
Right. When a foreign company acquires a distressed asset in India, the way they price the transfer of goods, services, or intellectual property between their new Indian subsidiary and their global headquarters is heavily scrutinized.
Because if they try to artificially shift the profits from the new Indian asset into a tax haven to recoup their investment quickly, Pillar 2 allows their home country to legally intervene and tax them up to that 15% minimum anyway.
Precisely. You might successfully navigate the Indian NCLT, isolate the liabilities, and acquire the assets at a brilliant discount. But if your transaction advisors didn't structure the global transfer pricing correctly under Pillar 2, you will trigger massive, unexpected tax liabilities in your home country.
Wow, that's wild.
The deal that looked like a massive win suddenly becomes a massive global tax burden. This reinforces why localized legal knowledge isn't enough. You need advisors who can see the entire board mapping the local NCLT resolution directly to global tax compliance frameworks.
So what does this all mean? We started by looking at distressed M&A as a terrifying landscape where broken companies trap massive value behind walls of toxic debt.
Right.
What we've uncovered is that transaction advisory services are the professional scalpel needed to extract that value.
That's a great way to put it.
They provide the ruthless objectivity, the forward-looking stress models, and the intricate legal structuring necessary to transform a chaotic, failing entity into a highly profitable strategic asset.
Absolutely.
Whether an organization is navigating incredibly dense Pillar 2, tax compliance, managing outsourced bookkeeping so their internal teams aren't blinded by their own data, or executing a massive NCLT acquisition, specialized external rigor is the ultimate differentiator.
It is about applying a highly structured, emotionally detached methodology to absolute chaos.
Yeah, that emotional detachment is key.
By isolating the exact turnaround signals, managing the psychology of panicked stakeholders, and utilizing the legal firewall of an asset purchase, these professionals manufacture a highly successful, legally defensible outcome from a situation most executives would run away from.
and the professional rigor required to execute that is a universally applicable skill set. You don't have to be a corporate raider analyzing the insolvency and bankruptcy code to use this methodology.
Yeah, not at all.
Whether you are evaluating a new vendor, taking over a failing project for your own team, or trying to fix a broken internal workflow, the principles remain the same.
Exactly.
Bringing in objective analysis to strip away internal bias, looking for vital sign metrics that prove stabilization, and structurally isolating the bad elements so the good elements can thrive. That is how professional value is created in any industry.
It is a definitive framework for turning structural failure into a competitive advantage.
Exactly. Which leaves me with a final thought for you to mull over as we wrap up. This deep dive shows us that financial distress forces companies to adopt incredibly innovative, lean, and ruthlessly efficient strategies.
They have no choice.
Right. They are forced to hire restructuring officers, aggressively cut waste, and hyper-focus on their liquidity ratios just to survive the week. But does a company really need to wait until it is staring down the barrel of insolvency to act this way?
That's an interesting point.
What if healthy, highly profitable companies occasionally ran a distress test on themselves? What if they utilized these exact same advisory frameworks and operational audits to hunt for hidden value and eliminate internal complacency while times are still incredibly good?
It would be revolutionary.
Just imagine the kind of resilient, unstoppable organization you could build if you professionally diagnosed the cracks in the foundation years before the roof ever started to fall.